welcome back to another podcast episode. This time we're going to cover the book Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. This book talks about a subconscious power to change what kind of person you want to be and make it happen that way. Let me ask you, where do you think your beliefs come from? Is it from your friends who've told you you're a certain way? Or maybe years of telling yourself you can do or you do certain things and that's the type of person you are? Maybe from a teacher you had in the past who kind of labeled you one way, but you still think about that day and what was said. Because we all have type of image of the type of person we are. Sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative, but it does impact us. And these stories are what help us make a reality. Because our mind creates reality through our perception. And that's why everyone's reality is actually slightly different. But we share a common understanding of things, but it's never the same. But Maltz talks about that you can actually get your pen out literally and metaphorically and make some changes. The first section kind of covers of we actually act according to the image that we've created of ourselves. And this mental blueprint is basically describing what kind of person we are. And it's these beliefs that hold on from our past experiences, past failures, past lessons we've learned. And they are pretty crucial because they reinforce to act like the person we want to be. And if you think of yourself as a failure, you're actually increasing your chances to fail. But on the other hand, if you think of yourself as somebody who's going to be successful, has been successful, and that's what your mind thinks, it pushes you or leans the balance of the scales towards the size of success. But why and how are these images that we create for ourselves formed in the first place? And it's actually a pretty logical reason. Let's take an example. A person might consider themselves like a failure because they had a bad year in school after the parents got divorced. While some can actually easily just bounce back from this and be on top of their stuff, getting the best grades, others might actually find themselves trapped in their images and fall to this type of person that actually is doing bad in all the classes, struggling a lot, can't really focus on anything. But it's their own image they choose to take that happens and what path is followed. Another big key point is that we're actually hypnotized by our negative beliefs. And our brain has a tendency towards the negative by default. So it's not just like, oh, I think 50% positive, 50% negative. No, your brain is automatically leaning towards the negative. That's why positive beliefs and talk takes harder to set in, but it's so much more important to do because the brain is going to lean towards the negative. And that's not because the brain is messed up or anything. It's because in the past when we were humans, as digital, as like when humans were just nomadic and they had to move from place to place, didn't have a place to hide, to get shelter at night, didn't know what would happen to them, if animals were going to eat them, if they survive. This negative mindset of, okay, how do we save ourselves, prepare for the worst, actually helped them. But nowadays, that mindset is still helpful in certain times, but it's too strong affinity of being like that from the past is causing problems as well. This is where the power of rational thinking can be super useful. And it's probably easy to think like hypnosis as a stunt, like a circus act, but actually every person is hypnotized in one way or another. And they might not even know about it. And hypnosis is actually basically belief in what you hold to be true to yourself. The author's friend, Dr. Alfred Adler, who did really bad at math in school, basically was like trash, made it seemed that his teacher believed that he had no talent for the subject. And because the teacher believed also, oh, this student really is not good at it and sucks at it, Adler also accepted this as a fact. And that's why he would also get the grades, which would prove his teacher right. And it goes in a feedback loop. There was this one time where he suddenly solved a complex equation. And when he showed it to the teacher, he realized that he really didn't have trouble getting the math concepts. And that way, his confidence soon and slowly increased, and he actually ended up becoming a better math student. But what had changed here? There's actually a false belief that Adler had about himself. And this experience that is pretty much what a lot of low-achieving students have. It's not that they're bad at anything. They just have a belief that, oh, they're not good at something. So then that feedback loop continues of, because I'm not good at something, so then I won't be able to do this, which causes them to not do good, leading to reinforce the belief of, okay, this person's not good at this. People experience both positive and negative beliefs in the same ways that can hypnotize them. And the goal, therefore, should be to break these limiting beliefs that hold us back. And this can be done through rational thinking. Usually the negative beliefs aren't part of a fact or an experience, rather just like a conclusion that our brain comes up with. And with rational thinking, which involves focusing on what is true logically and consciously, we can control the subconscious, the unconscious mind. And it takes work. It's not so easy. You got to ask yourself, why do I believe something? What is the true fact about it? This will help you figure out what are the false assessments you've made about yourselves and what it's doing to you. Simplest one could be, if I failed yesterday, I will fail today. But that's not true. When these type of thoughts come, you can easily see that each day is a new opportunity to learn. The pattern doesn't have to repeat. One of the biggest things is this mechanism holds true in the human body as well. People have theorized the human body as a machine, and it's not too far from the truth at times. It's not a machine exactly per se, but we have a type of machine that we can use when necessary. This is what the author actually calls the phenomena of psycho-cybernetics. Title save here, you know. Which is the brain and the nervous system act as an automatic response mechanism that takes in the negative feedback and guides its course. And it's operating on the belief that principles of cybernetics, which is the study of machines and mechanics, by applying this principles, we can actually find out why and how humans behave the way they do. One of these insights is actually humans have a built-in mechanism for success. For example, a baby might try to grab a rattle, but he can't store any information on prior experiences, therefore his hand has to swipe back and forth until he gets to the object or she. Once it's gotten the toy, or in other words, gets the success response, that memory gets stored for the future. And this example and experience over time becomes to improve the skill like grasping slowly things. This is the mechanism we actually put towards our goal. And what's crazy that the human mind can't really tell. What's crazy, the nervous system in your body, in our bodies, can tell the difference between imagined and actual experiences that occur. And that's why it reacts to what we believe or imagine to be true. This is actually research done by Dr. Theodore Xenophon Barber at the American University in the 1960s in Washington, where they actually hypnotized subjects, and they actually found that hypnotized subjects easily went under anesthesia after being told that they couldn't feel a pain. Or another one is Arthur Schnabel. He's a world famous concert pianist who rarely practiced on an actual piano. He would just refine his piano skills in his head. There's also other examples of where a dart player, a golfer who just improved their skills through just mental practice. It's hard to believe, but it's kind of similar to visualization, where you imagine of what it's a car race, what it go like, what the turns would be, how the car feels, the weather, the wind, the road. You can actually make your mind believe that you've already won something that you're about to do in this example. The same thing can be applied to actually stimulate creativity and make ourselves happy. And especially, let's say, when artists get writer block or stuck in brainstorming, the best thing to do is actually take a break and come back when inspiration kind of returns to you. You have to actually struggle with the problem enough to reach a point where you need to take that break in. Then our instinctive creativity kicks in, and that's where the best ideas come in, when we're not actually working. This is what Edison did. Whenever he didn't have something he could solve, he would just take a short nap. And usually after these naps, he would find the solution that he was looking for. Einstein did this with his walks. He would just go for walks when he worked on something and couldn't figure out for a bit. After coming back from the walks, he'd have a new idea. Same goes for happiness, where most people think happiness is like something that's in the future. But happiness can be practiced in the present moment. And the way to do so is actually this. First, you got to recognize that happiness is internal, not external to you. It's a product of our thoughts and attitudes we have. If you become unhappy, for example, or stuck in traffic and a driver honks at us, it's because we chose to respond with annoyance and frustration, which took away our happiness. It's easier said than done. Like, somebody honks at you and you're like, what, why, you know? But That's our instinctual response. It's so fast that it feels like there's no way you could react another way, but can. It has to be trained. And training is done by forming habits. And what are habits? Repeated actions for a long period of time that become so norm that you don't think about doing them. Same habits you can be done for a habit of happiness by focusing on positive points and letting go of the negative ones. Come back to Edison. He has another example where once he lost a multi-million dollar lab in a fire, there was no insurance for getting any compensation. Still, he decided to avoid the unhappiness and begin rebuilding the next day. So take it from him. And he also tried 10,000 times before actually getting the light bulb to work. People nowadays don't even try like 10 times before something they give up on. So what are the seven elements that make up a successful personality now? So success isn't something you simply find any more than failure is something you arrive at. You only fail when you actually quit. But sometimes you do have to know when to quit something to do something else, as a caveat. Failure and success are actually forces buried deep within personality. They're both brought about by unique sets of combinations of different elements. An acronym actually to explain the core elements of success personality is a sense of direction. Every human is a goal seeker, and just like a mountain climber, you need to find an objective to go towards. Once you get to this top objective peak, you simply go ahead to the next peak, and the second trait is understanding. Most failures are actually just misunderstandings as people's senses get distorted with fear, anxiety, or desire. Imagine two colleagues in conversation, right as you walk by, they look up and stop talking. You might think they were gossiping about you, but that's unlikely. It's just an example of how our feelings can alter perceptions. The third trait is courage. Only taking courageous actions can actually make you realize your dreams. You need the nerve to back up your ideas by taking these calculated risks. If you're not taking any action until you're fully sure, then nothing will ever get done. Because there's no way to be no sure or 100% of anything in life. You'd only have strong belief and confidence in what you are trying to do and go on with it. Fourth characteristic is charity. Since people that are successful are attentive to problems of others, dignity and respect other humans is something that's important. And fifth comes esteem. Because if you think you can't, then you can't. But if you think you can, then you can. So that's why having a self-opinion that's low is never a good virtue, but it's actually a threat to your success. So if you don't believe in yourself first, then nobody else will, which is actually so true, even though it sounds like such a simple statement. Sixth is actually self-confidence. Such a feeling is that it's built upon getting success, which makes it essential to remember the past wins, forgetting the failures, which actually hurt your confidence. And finally, self-acceptance is the last pillar of success. Without coming to terms with who you are, how you are, and just being yourself, all your strengths and weaknesses, you can never attain the things that you desire. These are the seven essentials to having a successful personality. Now, on the flip side of the coin, let's talk about the seven traits that are about a personality that's going to cause a person to fail. It's important to know what's on the other side. So, what are the factors that kind of lead to failure? They can actually be summed up by the acronym of the word failure itself. First comes frustration, which happens when you realize you can't complete an important goal. This makes you believe that you're not able to do something, and therefore, because you believe yourself that you can't do it, you are causing that situation to happen more likely than before. Next is being aggressive. This is good for achieving goals, but in a failure type personality, that aggression just directs towards being self-destructive, like worrying about who, overthinking, being too rude, than rather being the success where you actually are aggressive towards the goal that you want to go to that's worthy. Third comes being insecure or feeling like you don't live up to the requirements you've set for yourself. Insecurity is actually not by a real lack of ability, it's actually just a distorted system of measurement of yourself. If you compare yourself to imaginary, likely impossible idea, then you're not going to be self-assured about anything. Fourth is loneliness, the feeling of being alienated from other people. Lonely people just cut off themselves from the roads that lead to a healthy social environment. They fail to act, don't achieve. Fifth is failure by uncertainty, or avoiding mistakes by never making any decision at all. Making no decision at all is actually making a decision. That was something like recently, and I was like, wow, like when you don't make a choice, you are deciding to not make any choice as a choice. That's crazy. The failure to act actually and achieve your goals that you've set leads that you shouldn't act if you're not certain you'll win. And since there's no certain path at all, ever, no decision is made, and you're safe from failure, but you're also saving yourself from actually succeeding. Six comes resentment, where the personal failure is more accepted by blaming it on something that's outside of you, or some unfair treatment, or this happened, some situation. And finally, the last one is emptiness, where it's a symptom of failure itself, feeling results from being a life is boring, there's nothing worth pursuing. If you notice that any of the traits in yourself, like it's time to make a change. And I've definitely noticed at times these traits have come up both in the success personality type times, and also I've noticed the failure personality ones as well. It's all about emotional regulation, if you notice a trend so far, if you're still listening. Tending to your emotions is what's going to release your true personality and potential. This is what happens when you say you get injured, like physically, your body makes a scar to protect the damaged area. That scar tissue is nature's way of preventing further injuries to the same place. Same way, people tend to form emotional scars to protect hurt feelings. But these scars don't just protect you from the person who initially hurt you, but they can also separate you from all other people. After all, these emotional walls keep out our friends and enemies alike. You can actually overcome this by offering yourself an emotional facelift. It's like doing surgery on your emotions, but instead of having a real scalpel, you're giving forgiveness as the primary tool to cut away the old hurt feelings that allow healing to occur. But it's not easy. To truly forgive, you must forget the feeling that you were wronged, and even the act of forgiveness itself. Many people have many inhibited personalities that prevent them from exercising their creative potential and being their true selves. If you notice anyone who has a stutter, this is actually a result of inhibited personality. This is but caused by an excessive tendency to self-monitor, which generates a negative feedback. It's a good example how inhibiting a fixation on what others think and want can be. You really have to do deliberate practice to get out of this. By speaking before you think, you can actually ban the self-conscious thoughts like, should I have done that? This is the first step in unlocking creative personality. There are two techniques I want to leave you with to find feel in this world of distractions. So let's imagine you're at home, you're reading a novel, and your phone actually starts ringing, and you jump out of your favorite chair you're in, or whatever seat you're in, or the dining table, wherever you are, to go again and answer the call. In this one blink, you went from a peace state to one of unrest. The ringtone is trained basically for us to like alert us, so you're basically going to get it. But the truth is, you don't have to answer the phone. You could ignore it. Therein lies the first technique for achieving. By avoiding the stimulus that we're trained to just react and get activated by, you can actually choose to do so when you want to. A good way to actually try this is so you still don't miss the important calls when they come is just count in your head to three before you get and respond to something. So there's a gap that you can control of, okay, I hear it and I choose to go and respond versus just automatically making it happen. Another way is actually constructing a mental quiet room that's a safety place from your world. Imagine like your favorite place, favorite picture, landscape, wherever you are, so you feel calm in the room. So those are the two ways you can actually help improve. Thanks for listening and see you in the next one. Peace.
You've been listening to Pure Entropy. Thanks for listening to this podcast. It really means a lot. I appreciate all the time taking out of your day to give it a listen. If you'd like to support further, you can do so by leaving us a review on your favorite podcasting platform of choice. See you in the next one.